Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. What if pleasure wasn't something we earned or lost with age, but something we were born with? What if intimacy wasn't about performance or pleasing someone else, but about presence, sensation, and coming home to your own body? Today's conversation gently, and sometimes boldly, turns upside down everything many of us were taught about sex, aging, and desire. Linda speaks about embodiment, human design, and what happens when women stop forcing themselves into someone else's script and start listening to their own bodies instead. This is a conversation about permission, about unlearning shame, about why it's never too late to feel alive in your skin, whether you're partnered, single, curious, or quietly wondering if that part of you is just over now. Spoiler alert, Linda says it isn't. Listen now to my conversation with Linda Landon. If I told you that today's guest helps women in midlife reclaim pleasure, vitality, and joy, not as a luxury, not as something nice to have, but as a deeply human capacity that many of us were quietly trained to disconnect from, you might lean in or you might feel a little nervous. And that reaction alone tells us something. Linda's work is rooted in the body, in lived experience, and in the long arc many women travel from shame, disconnection, or simply putting themselves last toward wholeness, self-trust, and joy. Her own transformation didn't arrive early or easily. It unfolded in midlife when she finally found frameworks and practices that allowed her body, not just her mind, to come home. Today we're talking about pleasure, embodiment, healing, and what it really means to feel alive in your body as a woman in your 50s, 60s, 70s, or more, without apology, without fluff, and without leaving your wisdom at the door. Linda Landon, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Agnes, oh my gosh, that was the most beautiful introduction. I'm just almost moved to tears. Thank
Oh my
you.
goodness, thank you.
Wow.
Linda, let's start with pleasure. When you use the word pleasure, what do you actually mean? And especially for women who might hear that word and immediately think, yeah, no.
Oh, great, great, great start. So first of all, pleasure is our birthright. We were born into these magnificent bodies that have the capacity through sensation to experience the world. We were born for pleasure, no matter who we are or where we are, and it's ours until the day we die. So, what is pleasure? Pleasure is a capacity to taste, to touch, to be touched, to sense what's going on in the environment, to hear. What have I missed? There's another one, to see. And all this sensation is a gift. Yeah, so that's how I'm defining pleasure in this moment.
So it's taking all of our senses, what we usually think of as senses, and really tuning into them in an alive and caring and enjoyable way.
Yes, and sometimes being in our own pleasure or being, let's make this like open up the scope. Being embodied, it's about embodiment, as you mentioned in the introduction. Being embodied in these bodies that grow and change and, start to go towards getting older. Bodies go through changes. Bodies have sensations. They're not always pleasurable. Sometimes they're discomforting. We call them pain. So, opening to pleasure also means opening to your capacity to feel everything. So, for instance, when I work with clients and they're experiencing like what they call physical pain, I say, let's take the label pain off of that. And I want to invite you to relax into the sensations that are arising right now in your body. And when we don't resist that, and we drop into it, sometimes that opens up to pleasure. I mean, there's unlimited capacity here.
I gotta say, listeners, that you can't see Linda's face. I can, and her just it just opens up with just all this. I can't even explain it. It's pretty amazing. You've said your relationship with your body and your ability to experience pleasure was thwarted early on. Now, without
Oh,
going
yeah.
into details that you don't want to share, can you talk about how common that experience is for women of our generation?
And would it be all right with you if I do share a little of my
Oh, it's
personal?
in it's
Okay.
all your story, yes.
Because in my book, Pleasure Past 50, it's full disclosure here. It's all I inviting my listeners and my clients to be open and vulnerable. So likewise, I am too. So for me and for many people who may be listening, especially women, when I was growing up, the pleasure was a taboo in my family. Not only that, there was trauma, there was sexual trauma in my family. My father loved me to pieces. He loved me so much, but he also was inappropriate with me. And my mother, bless her heart, was full of self-loathing and shame. And I specifically remember a moment when I walked into her bathroom. I must have been about two, about that age when your eyes are about level with their hips. And I walk into the bathroom and I find her standing there naked. And I see this mound of curly hair and these two like pieces of skin kind of hanging down, protruding underneath. And I'm a, you know what, 2-year-old. And I'm like, oh, wow. I'm so excited and curious. And I reach out to touch. And she slaps my hand away and she says, "Dirty girl."
Thanks.
And then I looked up into her face and I saw the shame and the self-loathing and the disgust. So right there, I got this message that genitals are dirty and disgusting and not for pleasure. And then as I was, you know, my hormones are, you know, coming into play and I was moving into adolescence, I would explore my body, but I did it very furtively and privately, and I was full of shame, but it was calling to me. So there was this push-pull growing up between what I knew to be true, which is, ooh, there's like this body of mine is fun. And I don't just mean sexually, I mean just everything it can do, and the hold back. Yeah. So when I work with people, I hear so many women share that, you know, sex was taboo. And in my family, you know, we didn't talk about sex. At some point, my mother had the conversation about you don't have sex before you get married. And then when you do, because you're supposed to get married, that's a rule too. And then when you do get married, you have sex to please your husband and to make babies. But you don't do it before marriage, and God forbid you get pregnant. So it was all this shame and fear, like terror around sex. There was never any discussion about pleasure or orgasm or what's possible, or the woman even having a role. It was like we were just supposed to passively please our husband.
Thinking back, because you and I are so close in age, first of all, you said that pleasure was taboo in your family. I'm not sure it was even the word was even conceptualized in my family,
Yeah.
and I don't think any of us can blame, in air quotes, our mothers because that's all they knew.
Exactly.
You know,
And they
so
probably got that from their mothers, and
yeah.
it's just like generational. Yeah.
Yeah, we could really go down that road if we wanted to, but that's
Yeah, I
okay. We're going to
know.
stay on tune here. Now, your own transformation really accelerated in your mid-50s. Was it strictly the guides that came into your life, or did the experience of years help you see the truth behind healthy intimacy? And it sounds
Oh.
like the experience of years, to a certain extent, I'm going to partially answer my question there because you were talking about realizing as an adolescent that your body had all this stuff happening.
And I love how you frame these questions. So it was like this push-pull for me. There was, you know, desire and longing and turn on flowing through my body. And then when I entered, I'm waking making my way up to the answer
Yeah,
around
no.
age.
Yeah, that's good.
So, you know, I would enter in relationships But I didn't know how to surrender into my pleasure with another because there was too much shame. So when I, and of course I had sex before marriage. I mean, I was a healthy, adolescent. So I was a rule breaker too. And by the way, looking at your chart, I think you're that too. So, well, that's something we'll talk about later. But I broke the rules. That was part of my pleasure, actually. So I had sex before I was married. I didn't get married, actually. I got into partnerships, but when I get all turned on and I'd be, oh yes. But when that penis started to approach my vagina, turn on, everything just shut down because I was afraid and I couldn't surrender and share my own pleasure with another. So I decided that I was frigid. And so I learned how to fake it, fake orgasm, all of it. People thought I was the most incredible lover, but I was faking it. I was faking it. So at age 50, I broke up with my then lover, and I decided I was going to get to the bottom of this. Oh, and going to answer your question on another level, all along up until my 50s, I had a spiritual practice. I kept learning and evolving, and I was doing really deep transformational work to unwind, so many things. So I was coming in, I was really open and aware and present and available and connected to myself. But the sexuality piece, there was still this So age 50, break up with, I was with men and women. It was a little more fun with women, but I was still holding back. I was still had to be in control. So I really didn't orgasm with anyone, just with myself. So age 50, I break up with my girlfriend and I just decide, okay, I have to discover if I have any capacity or if I'm just done. So that year, actually, it was moving into the 50s, in mid 50s. See, in human design, which we'll talk about, or in astrology, there's something called your Saturn return, which is a time of cataclysmic change. So I'm moving into my second Saturn return, and somebody invites me to explore human design, which I did, and we'll talk about that. And at the same time, somebody else invited me to explore Tantra. So I started going to Tantra classes and I started to feel this orgasmic energy that circulated all the way through my body. And I was in community. So I was having experiences with others, but there was this container, sort of this incredible sense of safety. So I was able to surrender into what was arising. And then somebody from my Tantra community invited me to check out something called orgasmic meditation. Shall I tell you what that is? It's pretty incredible. So, listeners, imagine a woman lying on her back with her legs open and her pants off, having a partner who's fully clothed who strokes her clitoris for 15 minutes in a very particular, very present way. And all the woman has to do, I'm women, let, I mean, sorry about gender thing, but people with female genitalia, say we with clits, right? It's because I need to be PC here. But imagine just surrendering into the sensation of being touched in this incredibly exquisite way. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to please the other person. You just let go. And oh my gosh, Agnes, my world just blew open. Like levels of sensation I didn't even know were possible were surging through my whole body. And when I talk about orgasm now, I'm not talking about that rush when you climax, just poof. I'm talking about this amazing energy that just circulates and goes in wave, ebbs and flows and waves and peaks and valleys. It's just amazing. It can last for hours. So as you can see and hear, I woke up. And then, of course, I woke up and I was already a coach working with clients. So naturally, because this is how I am, everything I experience, test out myself, and then it's available for those I work with. So I started to infiltrate my work.
Ooh, okay. Let's
Okay,
let's go there. Like, what is human design?
so we got this piece going on, and then human design, it's all about energy, actually. Sensuality, sexuality, it's all about energy. And human design is this energy assessment tool. It's kind of like a personality tool, like Myers-Briggs or the Enneagram, but it's much more accurate and all-encompassing. And to run your human design chart, you submit your birth information. I run charts for free. We'll say again at the end, you can go to my website to the human design page and click and get your free chart. So we use your birth information to run this chart. And this chart is like your genetic blueprint. It describes who you were born to be, how you're designed to think, how you're designed to interact with others, how you're designed to work, how you're designed to be in your body. All of it is laid out in this chart. The thing is that most of us are going through our lives not in alignment with this chart because we don't know. We don't know how to align with it. So we're out of balance and we're in pain and we're in resistance and we're suffering. But when you learn how to become in alignment with this incredible tool, your life starts to flow in amazing ways. And that was totally my story. Yeah.
Okay, I've read your book, so I don't know if I'm going to do this in the correct flow. So you help me out here because next in my notes, I go from human design to sensing sexuality.
So we'll slow it down a little
Okay,
bit.
yes.
So that's, I mean, it's all weaves together. So I know nobody's watching, but I'm weaving my hands together
Yeah.
as I speak with you. So human design helped me get in alignment with who I am really truly born to be. And according to my human design, I am born to be an emitter of light and love through my body. My human design chart says that I am designed to embody and share the love that I am through my body. So that started to inform the work that I put together to give to my clients. And then the work I did, the work, the play I did, opening up sexuality through orgasmic meditation and tantra gave me like tools that became what we call the pleasure practices, which are part of the sensing sexuality. But
Okay.
first, for that 10-year period, I had to immerse myself in the experience and live it. And human design also can show you how you operate in the world sexually. So they enter, it's all a beautiful weave. So towards the end of my 50s, what came through for me was this work that I called sensing sexuality, which wove together the deliciousness of all the sexuality practices I'd been learning into a framework that I could offer to clients. And it scaled, like orgasmic meditation is super fun, but most people aren't ready to, for that. And I was really, really here to work and people, to guide people who are boomers, who are older. And they weren't ready for like finger on clit. No way. It's like maybe they didn't even want genital contact, even if they were in a relationship. Maybe, for a lot of people, that's kind of fallen to the wayside. So I created this way that couples, whether they've been together for a long time or were coming together, could start to connect with each other on a really mindful, presence-based way. And start to like tune into their own bodies and how to connect to the other through embodiment practices that start really simple and then build in levels of eroticism. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah, completely. And I will add that, you talked about building, but at the very beginning, if I remember correctly, it's just seeing each other. And then it's just the hand. So it's
Yes.
not like you're getting straight into, well, I got to be careful how I put this. You're not a sex therapist insofar as, do this, this, and this, and a little bit of a lubrication or something. It's more, it's really focused on intimacy, which may or may not lead to an actual sexual encounter.
Yes. Let
Okay.
me say more. This is so great
No, for,
because
yeah.
listening to you helps me clarify how to say this. So one of the things I say to people, all of you listening, women who are listening, the people I work with, we have been conditioned to believe that sex looks a certain way by media, what our parents taught us, all of it. And I call it male-centric sex. No offense to the men, bless their hearts, or our, male-gendered species, let's just say. But that male-centric approach to sex is you come together, you make out, you kiss, you get all hot and bothered, you do foreplay, and I'm doing this quote
Air
mark with
quotes,
my finger,
yep. Yeah.
like in quotes, foreplay, and you build and build until the moment of penetration. And hopefully mutual orgasm, and then you're done, right? That men, men can like move from zero to full arousal in like 15 minutes or less, depending on different things. That's their nature, but it's not women's nature. Women have a whole different cycle of arousal. They need time. And in my world of sensing sexuality, what we've typically called foreplay is part of sensing sex. Sensing sex is not penetration. That may occur or not, but sexuality includes the all of it. And when I, coach people, I invite them to take certain things off the table. Penetration, take it off the table for now. Maybe even genital contact. Let's just take that off the table for a while. And here's another one. Any goals or expectations, especially for climax, we're going to take that off the table. Here's another one. Pleasuring, giving pleasure to your partner. Take that one off the table. And what's left? Learning how to pleasure and find pleasure in yourself. And then when you fill yourself up with pleasure, that comes through you, and then that is what you give to your partner. You come to them from your fullness, and you touch them because it gives you pleasure to touch them. And when people are touched in a way where they know their partner is taking pleasure in that, they feel the difference. So I completely turn inside out and upside down the whole paradigm of sex. It's super fun. And sometimes there's a lot of resistance, like, oh no. But then there's also sometimes this sense of, oh, relief.
Where and how does verbal communication come into this?
Oh, yes, everywhere, but just the right amount. So, human design, one of the things that you learn through your human design is ways that work, communication ways that work really well for you. For instance, there are five types in human design. There are generators and manifesting generators, and they make up about 75% of the population. And you, my dear, are a generator. Generators, I have learned, respond well to yes or no questions. Would you like a little more pressure, honey? Would you like me to just stop moving? Would you like me to just pause? Yes or no questions. Interesting, because this is not what we've been taught. Open-ended is the way to go, right? Now, there are other types in human design, projectors like myself, manifestors, and reflectors. We do better with open-ended questions. So even in the doing what I call the pleasure practices, when partners do these practices together, they start to bring in the simple communication skills that they've learned from human design, and then they layer on. So let's say one person is sort of partner B, or that receiver, and the other is partner A. Partner A is perhaps touching partner B's back. Partner B can make requests, but they're very sensation-based. Can you slow down? Can you stay right there? Can you lean in a little more? So you ask very specifically for what you want that's going to make it feel better. And it's very positive. It's not like, ooh, it's like, honey, that feels really good. And so we work with communication, not too much, but just enough so that the connection deepens.
And is there room for, I'm asking you a question, I think I know the answer. Is there room for like experimentation insofar as you say, oh, a bit more pressure, and then that you go like, oh, actually, that doesn't work.
Yeah,
Okay.
totally. Absolutely. That's another, thing with the way we can get conditioned. My partner's supposed to know what makes me feel good. They better figure it out. And bless their heart, they're struggling over there and feeling so super, low in self, no confidence. It's my job to ask and show. Yeah. And nuance it. And take Here's the thing. We are each fully responsible for our own pleasure and our own everything, not the other. So it's up to us to share and ask and make adjustments and do it in a way that feels affirming. Because truthfully, we come together in sexuality and we're also insecure because we've been learning it all wrong.
Well,
Did that answer your question?
and it also, as I don't know what exactly you said, but it made me realize too how, in traditional heterosexual relationships, women, I don't know if they're taught or somehow we learn that men know about sex, whereas we all come from the same parents. And if they're not talking to us, they're probably not talking to the boys either. So yeah, it's we've really got to give ourselves and each other space to figure it out as we go.
Oh, it's so painful for them, for those, just we're talking more heterosexual here. I also work with gay couples and all mixes, but it's so hard for the men that they're expected to know. They don't know anything. They barely know their own bodies. And a woman's body, oh my God, that's a total mystery to them. And there's nothing in schools, there's no education.
There's
It's
another taboo.
right. Maybe you'll get education on, avoiding STDs and birth control, but that's all fear-based. That's no fun. I mean, that's important, but that's putting another stigma on sex.
Okay, so we've been talking about couples. The opening line of your book is, I am picturing you, two loving people in your 60s who have fallen out of love with each other. Now, a lot of listeners are going to identify with that, and I do hope it's the hook that sends them off to buy your book. Your clients' stories were all about couples. Now, I know single women who avoid anything that might have the potential of a relationship because their bodies are not what they used to be when we were 30, even 40. Sexual experiences in the past were sort of meh.
Right.
They're set in their ways, so they don't really want a roommate or a bed mate. Now, are the pleasure practices something they could play with, I'm going to use air quotes again, friends with potential? Because I always say never say never. Friends with potentials for intimacy and connection, and just keep those single living rules in place, at least for now. Maybe they would soften up the road, who knows? But is that a way for a single person to maybe figure this out with someone else?
Oh my gosh, such a great question. And by the way, as Agnes is saying this, you can see her light up with the question. It's like it's a really important question. Single women, well, how did this book is totally for single women, also for single men. Some of the practices in the book you can actually do on your own without anyone. You can definitely bring them into a potential playmate. There's all ways to work with it. But I mean, here's the thing. Here's another myth, okay? Your best sexual years are in your 20s and 30s and maybe your 40s, and then it starts to wane and your hormones start to change. And then, oh my gosh, we go through menopause and men go through their version of menopause, and then, it's all over. And it's not true, Agnes. It's not true. Like, actually, as a woman, when I didn't have to worry about getting pregnant anymore, wow, that was an opening right there. The levels of sensation that are possible do not diminish with age. I mean, this body is capable of more than we can possibly imagine. Even our genitals, even when they start to change and, the hormones, and there is still so much capacity for sensation there. And there are things you can do to augment and support the genitalia for sure. But, I've worked with single women in their 70s who are starting to wake up their turn on. And I've worked with couples in their 60s, 70s, where the women have said in our sessions, oh my gosh, truth is, I never really enjoyed sex before, and something's starting to wake up in me now. I mean, it's incredible. So, I love working with single women. I like to say to you, if you're listening, it's never too late to experience the pleasure that, you were born with, and to really let this body wake you up. And the more we're in our bodies and experiencing the vitality that can flow through our bodies, the longer we live. I mean, it's a whole longevity thing. In Asia, they say Asians live longer because they're just more tuned in to their sexual energy. So it's great. It's like, you call it life force, you call it chi, you call it kundalini energy. It's life enhancing. I mean, oh my gosh. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing here too is, as boomer women, many women have come to what's the word I'm thinking of? Define sex as insertion.
Right.
And yet intimacy can be way more pleasurable without actual insertion.
Yes. And as the intimacy grows and the people engage together start to surrender into the flow of sensation through the body, arousal starts to happen. Like the vulva, vagina starts to lubricate. And sometimes penetration is actually wanted and called for. But the big game changer for me was learning that penetration was not ever going to happen for me again until I like to say my pussy is like, yes, aroused, open and wet and ready to just pull it in. And post-menopause, and I'm not even on hormones now, that capacity is still there. But it's not a goal. It's a little extra surprise that can happen or not. And there's so many places and ways to explore that can be incredibly erotic, with or without insertion.
How do you feel about toys?
Fun.
Okay.
I have a drawer full of toys. Vibrators, different kinds of things. Different. I also there's some great places where you can get these herbal based and plant based lubrication and things you can put inside and outside that just wake everything up and make you feel more delicious and yummy. Toys are great. What I say is this: start with yourself and what you can feel with yourself without anything added. Like wake up that, develop your self-confidence and your ability to just relax into the pleasure of touch, whether you're touching yourself or being touched or touching someone else. And then you can start adding in toys, but don't use them as a way to skip over that step. Like vibrators are fun, but they're very high sensation, and our bodies can tune into much more subtle sensation. And it's not about climaxing. You know, a vibrator may help you climax, but what if you go in and you start to experience this rise and fall of sensation that surges through your body, even if a climax doesn't even happen?
Feel like we need to leave that pause. Now you've mentioned, I'm moving on now. Now that we've both sort of gone, you offer a human design body graph. I had my chart done. I found out I'm a pure generator. I don't understand anything else on this chart. Can you explain about the chart? And you're welcome to talk about mine if you want to.
I
Within
will talk.
reason, don't tell them too much.
No, I won't give away anything too personal. I'll tell a few things, and I want to leave a little time before we stop, and maybe this is in your note, to talk about, there's a chapter in my book called Tools for Liberation and How to Meet Resistance, because that's really important. So let's part that and step and address that a little bit before we close.
Okay. Yeah,
Okay.
you call the shots there.
All right, okay. So, I will know. Human design gives you this template, this body graph, this genetic blueprint of how you're born to be. So, for instance, as I said, there are generators and manifesting generators, and that makes about 75% of the population. Our generators, bless your hearts, because I am not one, are here to create and build and get stuff done. You are the workers, the creators, when, very important, when you're doing what you love to do. Now, generators and manifesting generators respond well to yes, no questions. So, may I ask you a few questions?
Sure.
Okay. Do you find that when you're doing what you love, you have lots of energy and it just goes and goes and goes?
Oh, absolutely. It's funny because I read your book yesterday. I'm going like, oh yeah, I'm sort of like that. I'm sort of like that. And then I'm reading the generator and I'm going like, okay, yeah, I just had this discussion 3 days ago. Yeah, I can stay up past midnight if I'm working on something that really, yeah.
And have you ever worked on something that wasn't fun for you?
Absolutely.
And did that give you energy or did that burn you out?
Yeah, it was like trying to walk through a wall.
Right. So you're designed to do what you love. And when you do, your energy just goes and goes and goes until you're done. And also, as a generator, you're here to master, like you can really zoom in on one thing and stay with it until you master it. That can be fun for a generator. Now,
Okay.
so far so good.
Okay, yes.
And also, there's a sound that generators make. It's in their gut. It's like, So see if you can find that. It's a little deeper down. It's like your inner GPS. It's in your gut. When I was growing up, that noise was not appropriate. But that's the generator noise. And it's deeper down and it doesn't involve the mind at all. It's just a gut knowing. So, generators and manifesting generators are here to respond to what's arising. You're very relational. You're in relationship all the time with people, places, emails, kitty cats, whatever. You're constantly in response. Does that resonate for you?
It does, but I'm also learning to pull back a bit because I have in the past been tried to be a fixer.
So when something arises to respond to, you need to listen to your and go, is this the good thing for me to enter into? Is this good for me? And if you get a yes, you go. And if you get a you just let that one go by. because you're going to get so many opportunities. You get so many opportunities, they're not all correct for you. So when you start to tune into this, you'll know which ones are good to go and which ones aren't. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm learning it later in life.
Well, hey, I didn't learn about this till later in life either. So when I came in on board with human design in my 50s, I discovered I'm a projector. So projectors are make up about 20% of the population. And we are not here to respond, and we don't have access to the And we do well with open-ended questions. We are designed to sit back and wait to be recognized and invited. Oh my gosh. So my whole life I've been acting like a manifesting generator, which is like a super active generator, doing, and constantly burning out, putting all this good marketing work into my business for, and nothing would happen. It was just this constant output with no return and fatigue and tiredness. I couldn't be what you are. I couldn't do it, but I was faking it, like I was faking orgasm, and it wasn't working, and I was constantly getting sick. And that also affects sexuality big time. So when I discovered I was a projector, I was kind of shocked. And it took me years to really settle into waiting to be recognized and invited. And that doesn't mean sitting home eating bonbons. I mean, I can be blogging or, creating a new website or being out with people, but instead of stepping in, I just kind of like enter in and listen and wait. And people started to get me and see me. And it's like when a projector is following their strategy, it's like this light starts emanating from them that's magnetic. But it was really hard to turn that one around. And there are other two types. There's the manifester, which is they're about 7% of the population. And they're the kind of people who can just go out by themselves and create and initiate and do something all on their own. They don't need any help. And they're very secretive and they're very fast. And they're unique. It's like they're all of these different types are part of this puzzle piece called humanity. And then there's the reflector, which is a very, very, very unusual type, which you can read about in the book. But it's like the projectors are here to kind of guide and direct the generators and the manifesting generators so they really stay in alignment. And the manifestors are like the starters. They get it started and then they're here to delegate the completion to somebody like a generator. Like we all work together in this beautiful way. And there's different sexual tendencies with the different types. Shall I say a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so the manifester and the projector and the reflector have, there's in the human design, when you see your chart, you'll see that there are these shapes and they're called centers. They kind of roughly correspond to chakras. They represent the heart, the head, the solar plexus, emotions, and so on. There's a center in the middle of the chart called the sacral center. And the sacral center is a very powerful motor that generators and manifesting generators have constant, steady access to. That gives them the capacity to go, do, build. And then they need a good night's sleep, and then they're ready to go again. The other three, the manifestors, projectors, and reflectors, we have that center, it's called open, which means we don't have that energy in the same sustainable way as a generator. We kind of pull it in from other people and play with it, and then it goes away. We can play with it, but it's not inherently our energy. So how does that translate into sexuality? And then, you can feel into this, and those of you who are listening can feel and see if this resonates. Generators and manifesting generators have steady sexual capacity for steady sexual energy, or sometimes the opposite. And they can be very clear about when they like to have sex or sexual play, and when they don't. There's kind of a regularity and a consistency for them. And they, you know, they can, it's important for them. And with everything I say, there's also a polarity. It can be opposite. Those of us with the open center, the open sacral, are really fluid around sexuality. Like projectors, we can go without sex for years and not really care or mind. But when we get in the field of someone we're attracted to and we start to take in their energy and amplify it, whoa, watch out. We can be incredibly playful and energetic sexually, but it's more fluid. And it's the same with manifestors and the reflectors. There's more fluidity around sexuality. There's more capacity to engage in different kinds of sexual play. Whereas generators tend to have more of a way that they like it and a way they don't like it. And you know, all of that can be worked with and played with in relationship. But that's just like a little sketch of what human design can reveal.
Okay, so everybody's going to run off and go to your website. Is there anything
No.
we haven't talked about that you want mid-age women to think about as they listen to this conversation
Yes.
that we haven't
And
talked about?
it's this, and it's something that's really important to me personally and with everyone. It's called, like, I dedicate a whole chapter in my book to this. When we're opening, when we're starting to like open to pleasure, we're starting to open to more capacity in our lives. And this can be expansion in any way. Sometimes and quite often, we'll hit a wall, we'll hit resistance. It's like that ego part of ourselves freaks out and goes, no, no. And we hit a wall, boom. In a relationship, it can look like a fight. Just as a single person, and just like resistance, no, I don't want to do that. Oh, this is a bad idea. I'm out of here. It's like that push away. That is supposed to happen, and it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong. So when you hit a wall of resistance, what's happening is that you're hitting an opportunity to go deeply into yourself and unwind something that's been running in your unconscious that wants to hold you back. And I work with this with everyone. And it's like resistance doesn't mean stop, resistance means pause and let's dig in and see what's going on here. And I usually cheer when there's resistance because it means there's progress happening and something's come up that just needs to be met with love and compassion. It's usually, you know, a very early childhood wound. And there's a way that I help people meet that wound with compassion and heal it.
In your
Yeah.
book, with your couples' examples, it sounded like some of them, when they met that resistance, that they pretty much said, screw this. You know, it's not working, or we do need to separate, or whatever. Like they just really saw it as a brick wall.
Right. And I say, whoa, let's dig in and see what's here. And then when they go through the process and come to the other side, there's more clarity. And maybe they decide to split, or maybe there's more intimacy than there ever was before. So I want to say to anyone who's listening, don't worry if you hit a wall. If you start to open up and you hit a wall, there's a way through it, and it's magnificent, and it's available for you.
Does it lead to confusion for people? Like, in terms of, you know, maybe they're thinking, well, you know, we're talking splitting. We're going to give this a try because there was a time when we were in love with each other and, you know, loved the intimacy. But if they then hit the resistance, like things are going pretty good. And then they hit that resistance, can it just bring up that thought of, well, we were right in the first place to consider separating. Do we really want to, you know, continue on with Linda, or I guess I'm just asking, is there confusion sometimes?
Absolutely, totally, 100%. Confusion, ambivalence, questioning. And so, what I say when I start working with any individual or couple, this is going to happen. I laid out in the beginning, expect resistance to show up. And when it does, in order to work with me, you need to commit to show up for your next session, no matter what. And we'll work through it. I'm going to show you how to welcome it and work through it, even though your mind and your confusion is saying, I'm out of here. This was a really bad idea. That's the moment that you need to, like, let go of, you need to let go and come in and let the magic happen. And it's not like they know how to do this. I guide them, I show them how to unwind this resistance. It's magical. It's sometimes hard, but it's amazing what kind of the transformation that happens. I mean, that's the bedrock of my personal work, Agnes, is working with all the resistance, all the confusion, whenever it comes up, just meeting was like, okay, here you are doing the process. Ah, I'm back.
Okay. Tell us about your book. I think I was surprised at how much was in it. Although I do
Oh.
understand, too, that it's going to be more successful, or a couple will be more, or a person will be more successful with you to bounce off of, to guide, to, just whatever, oil on water, whatever it is. Like you have a definite role, which you don't get in the book necessarily, but I was, tell us about the book.
Oh. Well, I wrote the book. It's actually the book wrote me. The book has been bouncing around inside of me for years, wanting to be written. And so I wrote the book because I have a message that needs to get out there. And, I love working with couples, and I will do that until I'm just, no, not working, which I love what I do, so I'm not stopping anytime soon. But I wanted the message to get out to as many people as possible. Because I know that talking about intimacy and sexuality is so vulnerable, and people are afraid. People are afraid to take the step, make the call, come in. So this was a way to get it into the hands of people where they could, check this out and start to play with it together or singly. And see how far they can get on their own.
Now, your book is called Pleasure Past 50, so everybody listening is going to go, whoa, it's actually written for us. However, it seems to me that there might be a lot more very successful marriages, partnerships, that if people took this in younger.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you're, many people have said that to me. I mean, one of my, yeah, it's written, it could be for any age, but my heart is so with those of us who are getting older, who think it's over for us. Yeah, no, it's good for any age. And it's good for, whether you're, female with female, male to male, it's like it doesn't matter. The practices can be adapted regardless of your gender. All of it all works. And that was the niche I wanted to really call to and call out. Because I can't tell you how many women in their 50s, 60s, or 70s who roll their eyes and look at me like, oh, that's over for me. Men too, but it's like the silent scream inside of women. And it's a different kind of thud or scream inside of men, but it's there. Yeah. And I also wrote it because that was my experience. It took me till I was in my 50s to like really wake up. I would love this kind of information to be given to teenagers. Does that answer your question?
It does, yeah. I just I guess I was thinking that there's so many reasons why a woman in her 60s or 70s might be, and we discussed them at the beginning, like all those preconceived social expectations. So a woman might well think, oh, thank God that part's over. So where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
So my website is Ignite, Ignite, your, YOUR, joy, JOY dot US. And I also have a Facebook page. You can search me on Facebook. I have two Facebook pages. And this Agnes will put in her show notes, I think. I
Yes.
have a free gift for those of you who are listening. You can get a sample of the book, the first. I think it's the first three chapters. Also, if you'd like to get a free human, get your own personal individual human design chart along with chapter five of my book, you go to my website and go to the page that says human design and click on get your free chart. But hopefully by then you might have gotten the whole book anyway, but yeah, I want you to have access to this book. I want everyone to be able to read this book and share it with their friends, their lovers, their children, their parents. And it's on special right now on Amazon. It's $2.99 for the ebook
Oh,
through the
wow. Okay.
holidays.
Perfect. Okay. We haven't had much of a personal discussion yet. So, may I ask you a personal question? Sorry, that was
Yes.
just, I realized that a personal question before we close. Like, yeah, we've just been discussing fairly intimate items all the way through. So, after that beginning, well, no, actually, it was basically most a good chunk of your life. It was either traumatic or unsatisfactory sexual experiences. You took to human design. Now, you've already explained, in your teenage years, you were experimenting and knowing that there was more. You say human design captivated you. Those are your words. And looking back, it sounds like your body always knew the truth before your mind caught up. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It does. And there's something in the human design chart called your incarnation cross or your life purpose.
Okay.
And my life purpose is to emanate the love that I am through my body, to be fully embodied and just to, so I'm just, I'm designed to be a lover. Yeah.
My first reaction is that's a hard cross to bear, just for the traditional meaning of that, but you also said, in your chart. So. Anyways, well, it sounds like your body finally got your attention.
Yes.
The look on your face is just so content with who you are. It's great.
And I did, my body was waking up way before my 50s. There was lots, and you read about that in the book. There are lots of times and moments when there was just like more awakening and more awakening and more awakening and more present. There was just this last little piece. But,
And was that your brain?
well, it was just. Well, we're always working with that. I like to call it the ego identity, the
Okay,
head, the naysayer. That was something I've been working with my whole life. But with that last little piece of recognizing my human design, knowing I was a projector and surrendering into that, and then opening up the channels of sexual energy that I didn't know were possible. So it's all been just like one thing leading to the next, to the next, to the next. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, so as we just discussed, your website link is in the show notes. All the links will be on your page at our website. Listeners, are you married and seemingly happy to leave intimacy on the back burner? Are you single and identifying with my earlier suggestions? Are you either married or single and find yourself reminiscing about intimacy with a partner as in days gone by? Talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. And I don't often say this, but you're welcome to leave comments under a pseudonym if you want to remain anonymous and your email address never shows. Was there a question I didn't ask, Linda? Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. By this age, we're pretty good at putting on the facade face. Your friend might be doing that too. Linda's words might open a door that they may or may not tell you about, but they will thank you for this episode that might be the key to that door. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button at your favorite podcast platform. It helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. The offerings are expanding there this year, so check it out. Also, check out the resource tab at boomwithabang.com. There's lots for you there too. Linda Landon, thank you for being my guest today. I'm really glad we had this conversation. And I'm going to say, especially for women who may never have been given language, permission, or a sense of safety around their own bodies, I think this will resonate more deeply than they might expect. So thank you.
Thank you, Agnes. And it has truly been my pleasure to be with you today.
And thank you, mine also. Have a great rest of week.